pick a window. This is the Defenestrate Media Network.
Oh, wow. I don't know about the costume, but that's some set of wheels.
Hi, I'm Marv Wolfman, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
You're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast, and I'm your host, the radioactive professor of all things comic book, J.C. Carter. Joining me today on the show, my super friends, in the north, our punk pixie, Miss Jocelyn Christensen.
Hi, guys.
And on the bridge of his own private enterprise, our very own Admiral James Tiberius Batman Laird Jeff Bell.
Can I have a personal moment here at the top of the show?
Always.
You may.
Dear 7-Eleven.
Uh-oh. What'd the Sev do?
Who the fuck puts mayonnaise on a French toast sandwich?
Oh, my God.
Who the fuck does that? What kind of monster goes, ooh, let's see, we got a French toast, we got a ham, we got an egg, we got a cheese. Put some mayonnaise on it. Ugh, you bastards. Yeah. So, the backstory is, it's St. Patrick's Day.
Aye,
as we record this.
Yes.
So I've got the taters. I've got the corned beef. I got everything. It's all in the crock pot. It's ready to go. Yep. I go to the fridge to get the apple juice, and we've forgotten to get apple juice because I like to cook my corned beef and apple juice.
Right.
Tastes great. Less filling. And so I jump onto the DoorDash to the 7-Eleven, and I'm like, I'll get this and a couple of candy bars, you know, hit your $10 for the zero delivery and get my shit. And then I see the French toast sandwich. I'm like, I love French toast, and I love sandwiches.
What could go wrong?
Mayonnaise. That's what went wrong.
Oh,
I'm not kidding.
So
it was
sorry.
Like, it was, I took a bite. I didn't even get a first chew in before my mouth's like, oh no, 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 no.
That's almost as violent as my reaction to the BLT from Arby's. Oh God, it's they put in the fucking horsey sauce.
Yep.
Oh dear.
I am going to die.
What a terrible start to your morning, though.
Oh, no, that's late morning. That's just happened, like,
I'm over here going, would you, I don't even think you should, I don't think they put mayo on Monte Cristos.
They don't.
No.
Yeah.
You put mayo on egg salad because it's savory.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's all I'm saying.
I always laugh about that. I'm like, it's more egg for my egg salad is adding my. Is
yes,
adding
please.
Egg. Yes.
Anyway, so between the fucking sandwich, Tiffany not feeling well, and then I am, it appears, passing a kidney stone. It was really nice of my kidney stone to wait until my days off work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway,
that's America.
if I sound a little strained today, it's because I am in an excruciating amount of pain, but I do this for you, the listener. If I can record during COVID, I can record during a kidney stone.
We're here for you.
Yep.
We will take all the risks for you.
So this might be a good time to remind you that we're doing a fundraiser right now, and if you want to help us move into a studio and get out of these weird apartments that we're all kind of in, well, I guess that's me. You guys have houses, but still, point stands. You
point
pop
stands.
Over to thecomicbookpodcast.com, click on the fundraiser there, and give us a little bit of a hand. You know that I would appreciate it, and you know what I am willing to sacrifice just to make you guys entertained. That's it. That's my fucking fundraiser pitch this week.
I love it.
It's a good one.
I love it.
How about you, Joss? How's your week going?
Oh my gosh, we finally saw some sunshine this week and some warmish temperatures. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling the depression fog of winter fall off of me, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Got to go spend some time out and about in Salt Lake yesterday, dropping off Girl Scout cookies. We went to Red Butte Garden for a few minutes and walked around. Not much to see there yet, but it'll be beautiful in a few weeks. So, yeah. What about you?
I got my delivery of Girl Scout cookies yesterday. I was so happy.
Yeah.
And I opened up the bag of the chocolate chip / caramel.
Mm-hmm.
Much like the, what are they? The Adventurefuls.
Yes.
Can't taste the caramel.
Oh.
That always bums me out. I'm like, I want to be able to taste the caramel. You know, Milky Way and Snickers, I could taste the caramel when I have those candy bars. Why can I not taste caramel in these cookies? In the end, I don't know. This was the cookie that, so I remember when my daughter was selling Girl Scout cookies and they came out with the gluten-free cookie. And I remember Bobby D was very excited to get them because he was having to be gluten-free. And I said, okay, I can get you some. He thought he was getting the chocolate chip ones, the chocolate chip caramel ones, because that was what they made east of the Mississippi.
Right.
And all the stuff made west of the Mississippi was the Toffee Tasks. And I remember I brought the box of Toffee Tasks for everybody to try. And everybody on the show was like, this is terrible.
Oh, the gluten-free ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember hating those.
Yeah. I don't think these are much better. So just more chocolatey. That's all.
That's interesting. I've heard that these are way better than the Toffee Tasks, but I haven't tried them. So I don't know.
I think if you like if you're a fan of the chocolate to the nth degree, then they're going to always be better than the Toffee Tasks, because Toffee Tasks are very dry. You got to have a full glass of milk. Yeah.
Fair.
You got to have a full glass of milk to enjoy one of the Toffee Tasks. That's all.
Did you order any of the Toastier cookies?
I did not. I think Michelle might have, because she ordered from another Girl Scout.
Oh, beware the Ides of March. E2, Brutus? E2? No, I only ask because I'm not entirely sure if he's a listener of the show, but I know he's a friend of Dr. Volt's, which is Dr. Paul White. Before I was even done delivering Girl Scout cookies, messaged me and said, I've only had two of these, but you need to let me know if you have any extra packages, because I'm going to buy them. Oh. So there you go.
I love Dr. White.
Yes, Dr. White. So, yeah, might be doing a drop off of more cookies soon. Who knows? Who knows? Bye.
I think Michelle ordered some. I don't know. She hasn't gotten her order yet because her Girl Scout isn't as on the ball as my Girl Scout is.
Well, yeah. Girl Scouts, if you are looking for Girl Scout cookies, I think you can just Google search and cookie booths are starting to pop up, I think this weekend, if not this weekend, next weekend for sure. So you've got a few more weeks to look out for your cookie booths at your local neighborhood grocery stores for the most part. So, yeah.
Most excellent.
Yep. That's about it for me.
All right. Let's see what happened this week. Just work. Well, it was nice to have work again. Okay. It was good to have work again. I don't know that it was nice. It was kind of, you know, right back to me going, yeah, I got to get out of here. You know, I was like, God, I hate this. 10 years of being on contract. It kind of gets old after.
I bet.
After the first year. I've done it for 10. It's just been work. And then it's St. Patrick's Day, the day we're recording. I may or may not have already had my Irish coffee. Made actual Irish whiskey. So, yeah, I'm already on it. We're ready to go. It's fucking St. Patrick's Day. That's all there is to it. Avoid the green beer. Drink the Guinness.
Are you gonna punch your family soon? Isn't that a joke? A comedian joke?
That's a comedy joke. I don't punch my family, but I give them punch lines in the form of dad jokes, which they then groan at. It'll be fun. I'll probably do my 5,000th viewing of The Commitments today. Nice. And
we're doing Boondock Saints.
That's a good one.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
And, you know, throw him a green shirt, my Irish shirt. I call it my Irish flag shirt because it's got the orange stripe, orange and white stripe, and then it's green.
Yeah. I've got my green and gold nails, and then I have a shirt to put on later that says shenanigans coordinator with a shamrock. I love it. It's my favorite. I'm going to wear it all year round. That's me. Shenanigans.
Hey, what's that? What's that restaurant with all the shit on the walls? All right, let's dive into some news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Respect my authority. Oh, I'm sorry, I read that wrong. Eric Carmen. Eric Carmen. Oh my God, they killed Cartman. You bastards. Eric Carmen, known for songs like All By Myself and Hungry Eyes, has passed away at the age of 74. Stand by.
Got some fun trivia about that song. You want to hear it?
That it's not sung by a woman, no matter how much my brain tells me it is.
even looking at the photo of Eric Carmen, I keep. I don't. You know, it's the same thing. No. He was a like many rock musicians of his era, was a big fan of. Even today, big fan of classical music. He took the piano riff from a Rachmaninoff song. Problem was, it wasn't 100 years old yet. So the Rachmaninoff family sued him and got 12% of the royalties for this song.
Nice.
In perpetuity because of it. Yeah. It's like,
there you go.
You could rip off Beethoven. You can rip off Pachelbel, who, if you've ever seen that comedian do the thing on Pachelbel where he's playing the guitar, there are so many songs that rip off Pachelbel, including Green Day.
Oh yeah.
And it's just funny to have, and if you don't know it, go look it up. Pachelbel, comedian. I don't know his name. But yeah, this was one of those moments where you can usually take from any of these guys because their songs are more than 100 years old. But apparently in 1970 when he wrote it, he was just shy of the 100 year thing for Rachmaninoff, so they were able to sue him.
Nice. So Eric Carmen, former lead vocalist of the Raspberries, singer of All By Myself, and Hungry Eyes.
Hungry Eyes. Again, not sung by a woman.
Again.
That my head tells me. Yeah.
Died at 74, which, as the days go on, I find closer and closer. It is with tremendous sadness that we share the heartbreaking news of the passing of Eric Carmen. Our sweet, loving, and talented Eric passed away in his sleep over the weekend. It brought him great joy to know that for decades his music touched so many and will be his lasting legacy. No cause of death was given, but apparently he was sleeping when it happened. That is a hell of a great way to go.
That's
absolutely.
That's the way everybody wants to do it.
That's the dream.
And then,
I peacefully in my sleep, unlike the rest of the people in my dad's car.
Yep. Joe Camp, dead at 84. You don't know Joe Camp. Because I didn't know Joe Camp until yesterday when I typed dead celebrities this week because we didn't have any Admiral news. And Joe Camp was the creator and director of all the Benji films, which I loved as a child. And it's one of the reasons that I love dogs to this day. Well, you know?
To people of our generation, Joe Camp is a fucking hero.
Nope.
Because the Benji movies were so great. And in my opinion, much better than the Shaggy Dog stories, movies. You know, Shaggy Dog, Shaggy D.A., that kind of thing. Yeah. Because that's where some dude turns into a dog.
Shaggy S.V.U.
Yeah. He's a...
Boom, boom.
That was such
sunglasses.
A weird movie. Yeah. Wow! Yeah. No, he was. Yeah, I did. He was a weird sheepdog. The Shaggy DA. But no, I liked Benji a lot. It was sort of a contemporary Lassie. Yeah.
Which we needed.
Yeah, we did.
There's not a lot of wells anymore.
That's nope. probably good.
For then you to fall down in fall so down that then, Lassie yeah. can save you. Lassie doesn't know how to do shit if you like get caught in a bear trap. What's he going to do? But if you're in a well, Lassie's got that shit covered. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Joe Camp died Friday morning at the age of 84 in his home in Bell Buckle, Tennessee.
Aww.
Following a battle with illness, according to his son, filmmaker and writer of the 2018 Benji reboot, Brandon Camp. Yep.
I don't remember a Benji reboot.
I do.
Okay, good.
I didn't see it, but I remember it.
Okay, good.
Camp had no Hollywood experience before he managed to raise $500,000 to make the first Benji movie, a family movie about a lovable mutt who saves a pair of children from kidnappers. Higgins the dog, previously appeared on the CBS sitcom Petticoat Junction, came out of retirement to star in the titular role. So...
there he was, enjoying a quiet retirement.
So he raises 500 grand to make the movie, and then he can't get distribution. So you know what he did? He started his own distribution company.
Well, yeah, like you do.
Yep. To distribute the film himself, Benji would go on to make almost $40 million, which, adjusted for inflation, is about $250 million in sure today's is. Money.
And in 1974, $500,000 was unheard of to raise that kind of money
yep.
for a film like this. So he was able to raise a huge amount of money, was able to make even more money off of it. Yeah.
Yep. I just like that. It's like, oh, I can't get distribution? Oh, I'll do it myself. You know?
How hard can it be?
Well, as a guy trying to raise $6,000, it's kind of hard. I don't know who he knew, but... he obviously runs in circles in a higher tax bracket than I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there. That's it for the news.
Ooh. All right.
And I had to dig and scratch for that shit.
I got some breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news. Doctor Who has a release date. May 10th.
I love that for me.
That's my first day in Scotland. Motherfucker.
No.
I knew that was going to happen. Yeah.
You're going to watch it on the BBC.
Well, that's what I'm questioning. Is it a same day release or is it a week early release? Cuz I would do I'll have my tablet that has Disney Plus on it. It has a Disney Plus app, so providing there isn't an issue with the I don't have a VPN on my tablet, right?
Yeah.
So providing there isn't an issue with location, I should be able to watch it on the 10th. But, you know, if it's the same day airing on the BBC, then fuck yeah, I'll watch it on the BBC.
There you go.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
I just don't know if it's the same day thing. You know what I mean? So we'll see.
Cool.
Yep.
Nice.
And that's it.
All right.
Now it feels like we got a real segment there.
Well, it does. So we're going to take a little break, and when we get back on the other side, we're going to be talking about television.
Woo-woo!
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job?
Not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters?
Or a mother who's in between jobs and
sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner?
I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Elena Huffman, Abaddon on Supernatural, and you are listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Hey, tell me?
There is nothing wrong with your television. Do not attempt to adjust the picture.
Okay, now what's my line now? Oh, what have you been watching on TV this week, guys? Or in the moving pictures this week?
Moving pictures this week, I forgot to list it, but I did do a kind of a rewatch of Ted Lasso. And I love that show. It just makes my heart happy. I also, another show that makes my heart happy is Star Wars. So I watched the Skywalker saga. And I still don't know. I mean, there are missteps, but I don't know why they got so much hate when they came out. Because I delight in them. I think they're delightful. Little Daisy Ray is super cute and adorable, and I love her.
Yep.
And then my mother and I, we have a standing Friday night date to watch TV together. And we started watching Griselda on Netflix, which is Sofia Vergara in makeup that makes her look not at all like Sofia Vergara, playing Griselda White, who was a giant cocaine dealer in Miami in the 80s. And so it's been really intriguing. I watched the first two episodes of it, and I'm like, I don't know. I joked. I was like, Mom, I knew what was going on in the 80s because, you know, we watched Miami Vice growing up.
This is Sofia Vergara showing she's got acting chops and not just,
absolutely,
not just sex symbol chops. I like that. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really well done. Really well done. And it's in both Spanish and English because they subtitled the Spanish for me, and I'm enjoying that a lot, actually. So what about you, Jeff? What'd you watch this week?
Started a rewatch of Ahsoka.
Ooh.
That's been fun. It's nice going through again. Made me super sad about Rey. Again, I think Liev Schreiber is the way to fix that. Because I cannot think of a single actor that looks or acts anywhere close to what Ray Stevenson put into that role.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
I
can agree. It's also nice to see Hayden again. I enjoyed him in this. I enjoyed him in Obi-Wan. And it's nice to enjoy him in something that's not, you know, the prequels.
Yes.
Misa hates prequels. of course, After Midnight, which I'm just going to bring up every fucking day that we do, is I love After Midnight. And also, oh, for fuck's sake, Belle, where is your head? Anyway, I'll move on. Shogun in Hulu is so fucking good.
See, everybody says it. I gotta get to watching it.
Yep. It is a good slow burn, just like the goddamn book. Because remember, the book is, I believe, 7,000 pages.
Something like that, yeah.
I've read it 3 times.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I love James Clavell. The dude has got away with prose. Especially when he's talking about shit that, you know, when you are giving a description of something that is in your culture, you have common words and phrases that can spark the imagery to get your point across. When you're explaining things that aren't part of your culture and aren't part of a modern culture, but are going to be day-to-day things that the characters he's writing about deals with, Clavell really finds that balance that, like, Stephen R. Donaldson couldn't find because he's a loquacious motherfucker. So is Clavell, but it all works. It all just ties in well together. I love Clavell. And in fact, we'll be reading all of them again here as soon as I can get out to my storage unit and find the goddamn things.
Nice.
What'd I do? Yeah, so. Yeah. Oh, Game Changer. Jesus Christ. Game Changer just put out its second episode, or its third episode of the season. Over on dropout.tv. $5 a month. If you don't have it, it's worth dumping like AMC for, because AMC sucks right now. but Game Changer was just fucking hilarious. I mean, just fucking hilarious. To the point that I laughed so hard one time I almost coughed myself to death. And then I laughed so hard at another one, you know, like sustained laughter that I felt like I'd been doing sit-ups for half an hour. So,
nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Game Changer. I cannot. They only drop an episode every 2 weeks. It drives me nuts.
I bet.
Yeah. Yep. So what about you?
Well, I think because of the Oscars, most of my regular watches were suspended this week. So I didn't have Tracker. I didn't have Equalizer. But I did have, of course, all week, I had The Daily Show, which was fucking amazing. And I had After Midnight, which was also fucking amazing. And then I came upstairs during work at one time this week, and my wife was watching this show. And I was like, what the fuck is this? It's so familiar and not familiar. And then it gets to the end, and I'm like, oh, it's October Faction. I had not watched it.
Great show.
And so she said, well, do you want to watch it? I said, yes. And so Friday we put back on. She'd only gotten through the second episode. So on Friday we went back, rewatched the first and second episodes, and continued on. And we binged the whole thing, finished it yesterday, last night. Fucking love it. And I'm mad that I didn't watch it, because I know I'm part of the problem. As to why it ends on a cliffhanger, we won't get a second season ever.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an older series, but Netflix has kept it on there because hell, they produced it. They're going to keep it going. From IDW. Much like what's the other one? Umbrella Academy. This one is based on the series, not trying to recreate the series. And I think it does. It makes it a little more accessible. Yeah. I said the same thing about Umbrella Academy. I'm like, Umbrella Academy is a great comic book. And it's an even better Netflix series.
Yeah.
Because they really take what he could not convey in his first comic book to be something really powerful.
Yeah, and I screwed up. I did my Umbrella Academy rewatch a couple months ago. Thinking that they were dropping the new season in March or April, and it turns out it's not coming out until August.
Oh.
Ugh.
Ugh. Well, you're still fresher in it than I am.
Yep.
So. that's what I've watched. So I guess we could dive into some moving picture news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Rogue Squadron, back in development with Patty Jenkins at the helm. In a stunning turn of events, Patty Jenkins herself is saying that after Wonder Woman 3 was put on ice, she's back developing Rogue Squadron for Lucasfilm. She was on a podcast called Talking Pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. She said, when I left Star Wars to do Wonder Woman 3 and started working on that, we talked about, well, maybe I'll come back to Star Wars after Wonder Woman. So we did a deal for that to happen, started a deal. But when Wonder Woman 3 went away, Lucasfilm and I were like, oh, we got to finish this deal. So we finished the deal right as the strike was beginning. So now I owe a draft of Star Wars. We'll see what happens there. They have a hard job in front of them of what's the first movie they're going to do and the other directors who've been working. But now I'm back doing Rogue Squadron. We need to develop, you know, get it where we're both super happy with it. Okay.
That makes me super excited.
I'm excited too.
Yes.
I would argue that I think that the Bryce Dallas Howard episodes of The Mandalorian are the better ones.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I have a feeling that putting Patty Jenkins, who's already proved, with one weird exception, looking at you, Wonder Woman 84, right. You know, that she can do good stuff. And again, had it been two movies, it would have been brilliant. Mm-hmm. Even with the creepy kidnapping of the dude's body.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You take out the body snatching part, it's a really good movie.
Yep.
it still has some weak parts to it, but it's still a really good movie. But the body snatching thing is like something you either have to just forgive and forget about, or it's gonna bother you, you know.
You could take out almost all of the Chitara stuff.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the movie would be unchanged.
Yep.
Right.
You know? You could leave, you know, a secondary protagonist / antagonist in there, mm-hmm. to do what Kristen Wiig did, but then you just take out the Chitara stuff, and it's like whatever.
Yeah, well, it would have worked. Same argument could be said for the Steve Trevor stuff. You could take all that out, and you still have the same movie.
Yep.
You know, he didn't. It having him show up wasn't much of a contribution to the movie, except that it enabled her to create an invisible jet, I guess. I don't remember.
I don't know. It was there as eye candy for weird
Yeah.
Not quite weird. By curious guys like me that are like, well, I don't want to blow him, but I'd let him blow me. Who am I kidding? I'd blow Chris Pine in a heartbeat. 8 billion genies. 8 billion genies is moving in the direction of a movie for Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Franchise already has big names attached. Monday it was revealed that Seth Rogen and his Point Grey Pictures are producing the project for Amazon MGM Studios. You're the only person unhappy about this.
It's going to need a pre-story, and the pre-story is going to take place in this one place, and that's going to be the whole first season. Yeah, that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw his name and was like, oh boy, we get this again. He does so much cool stuff, and you're still mad about one thing that, frankly, having read and loved the series, I thought was fine. It was okay.
Yeah.
It was all right.
Never forgiven his ass for that one.
I don't even know what you guys are talking about.
He was Preacher.
Are you angry?
He was the showrunner for Preacher.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay,
and
that makes sense.
Yeah.
So they rewrote the whole first bit to set up the universe, and
someone on
this podcast hated it and still hates it.
Yep.
I remember. I remember that now.
Stopped watching after like the fifth episode because I'm like, fuck this. Yeah.
Right.
No, I don't even think I made it 5 episodes in because I would have gotten to the angel fight.
No, from what I recall, you made it 2.
Yeah, I think I made 2 episodes.
And I'm pretty sure you hate watched number 2.
Yeah, I did.
But the angel fight was awesome. Oh my God, what a bloody mess that was. That was fun. Red Sonja Star says the reboot will subvert the original's male gaze trope. It's very women empowered. Good. It should be. It's a badass lady, you know, that's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And when Gail Simone wrote her, it was brilliant.
I was going to say the smartest thing to ever happen to that comic book was when they put Gail Simone on the remake of it. Was it Dynamite who got a hold of it?
Yeah.
And Dynamite, who's known for all these, you know, variant sexy covers of their sexy starlet books. Gail Simone's Sonja was fucking amazing. Yeah,
I picked it up. Had to save up for fucking 2 months to get that fucker.
That's a tome.
Yep. I'll tell you guys a secret about it after.
Oh, sweet. Secrets. I'm so excited.
No, I bought it on Amazon because it was on sale.
I may or may not be doing that with that Hulk, World War Hulk one.
I can't help it. It was expensive, and it was only $20 on Amazon when I was looking for socks, and I was like, well,
Right.
Yeah. No blame being placed, friend.
To me, when they say that's been more women empowered, it sounds like they're the production team, whoever's the powers that be at the studio are like, let's take a cue from the Gail Simone version more so than the previous versions. So, and let's take a cue from Wonder Woman and the Marvels and let the ladies be in charge and see if we get a good movie out of it.
So Matilda Lutz is Red Sonja. Mm-hmm. This is supposed to premiere this year, almost 4 decades after the release of the original one with what's her name? Why can't I remember her name?
Is it
Bridget.
Bardot?
Bridget, yeah. No. Not Bardot. Bridget, anyway, Bridget fuck something. It. Anyway, Lutz says, and I have a commentary at the end. Lutz says, so what I can tell you about Red Sonja is that the first ones in the comics were made with a very male gaze orientation. This is a completely different story. This is very women empowered, which I loved about the script. Cue incel rage.
Of course.
So,
I mean, I can't look at the boobs.
So,
Nielsen.
Bridget Nielsen, yeah. Ended up marrying Flavor Flav.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah, boy. I can't believe you fell for that.
And this was the third. So Schwarzenegger was contracted to do 3 Conan movies with De Laurentiis. But because Conan the Destroyer didn't get as wasn't as well received as the original Conan the Barbarian. He's like, you still have to do a movie. And Arnold's like, fuck you, I'm not doing any movie. You can sue me. And then they said, nope, you got to end this. And basically all of his people were like, you got to go back and do a movie. He goes, well, maybe not Conan. And so even though it's supposed to be Conan in Red Sonja, because that's how it worked in the comics, they made it a different character. Even though it's Arnold, and he's basically playing Conan. Yeah. He just didn't want to be called Conan. That was the concession for Arnold in that one.
Well, that's it. Since Conan the character is in public domain, but Conan the name is not, you've had, like, the Sumerian comics that came out. They're Conan comics. They're about Conan.
Yeah.
You know, it's just they can't call it that on the cover because of copyright stuff. But they can write about it all they want.
That's because Marvel went and bought it back just before, got the licensing back just before it became public domain. So they could keep a hold of it. Yeah.
Well, and then they have now shipped it off to Titan. So Titan's writing it, which has actually been very good. You know what else was good for Red Sonja? It was Mirka Andolfo did a run on Red Sonja for a little while. And that was really quite good. You know, and I say this is a character I don't read. You know, what I do is I read Gail Simone. So I picked up that. And then with the Mirka Andolfo stuff, I remember having a slow afternoon at work, and we're supposed to read a comic a day. And I was like, what the fuck? And I picked it up, kind of burned through it. I was like, that was really good. So my comic for the next couple of months was that one. I think I read the first three or four issues, you know, before I just, because that reading a comic a day thing at work, it never happens.
I'm sure.
So I don't think I've read a comic at work since, I guess it was 3 weeks ago when I did Uncanny Valley and what's the new one from Forstner and Fleece?
I can't remember.
Cats. Feral.
Feral.
Which, by the way, both of those titles, gang, you know, reach out to your local comic book shop, especially if you're Dr. Volts, and get those on your order. If you liked Stray Dogs at all, you're going to love both of these. Okay, moving on. A fan favorite, Harry Potter star, is reportedly joining the MCU. According to Daniel Richtman. What is her name? Natalie Tenna?
Natalie Tenna.
She played Tonks.
Yep.
She's apparently coming in for a, quote, project she will be a part of, end quote.
She's going to come and do a thing, you guys. That's all you need to know.
Yep.
I'm going to be in a project.
A thing.
Moving on. According to trusted insider Daniel Richtman, you might have heard of him from our previous article. Marvel Studios will be taking fewer risks in the future and focusing on more guaranteed hits. This means that Eternals 2, which was reportedly being worked on at Marvel, is now on hold, as Bob Iger believes it's destined to flop. This bums me out. I liked Eternals a lot.
I did too.
I really did. What else we got going? Ant-Man 4, Captain America, or Captain Marvel 3 are also not expected to happen following the box office performance of their respective predecessors, The Marvels and Quantumania. I liked Quantumania. Yeah, it had problems. Of course it had problems.
Well, yeah.
But if you stack it up against Aquaman any fucking day of the week, including leap year's 29th of February... You know, it is a far superior product.
Right.
And no, I didn't compare it to The Flash because, seriously, I have had bowel movements that are better formed and stories told than The Flash.
Honestly, I was thinking the same thing. What bumps me out on this one, of course, is the Captain Marvel 3, because The Marvels was an amazing fucking movie, and fuck you incels who ruined it for everyone. Yeah.
Well, and fuck you, incels, Bob Iger, who's running the company that says it wasn't a good movie. Like,
oh no, yeah, Iger's like, well, we need more producer control. It's obvious the producers need to take control again. I'm like, no, they don't, Bob. No, they don't.
It's been quality stuff. Just the problem is when everything's fucking awesome, some things aren't going to be as awesome as others. And then every once in a while, you know, you throw a labia majora in the mix and suddenly all the dudes that watch comic book movies are like, oh, God, it's one of those fuzzy things. Throw rocks at it. Try and scare it away.
It's true.
I'm just saying, they're afraid of vaginas. That's what I'm saying.
I know. Okay. I know.
I, fearing no vagina, will watch the Marvels over and over again and not once feel like I am threatened in my masculinity. Jesus Christ, did you guys forget fucking Fury is in that goddamn movie?
Yeah.
Okay, you need a little bit of toxic masculinity? There's your guy, motherfucker! What you need is in there.
Yep.
And a musical, which I frankly found charming and delightful.
Mm-hmm. Holy crap, it was so good.
X-Men 97 creator Bo DeMeo fired ahead of his Disney Plus series premiere.
Oh.
He had completed work on seasons 1 and 2 of X-Men 97 ahead of his exit. He will not attend the Hollywood premiere, or he did not attend the Hollywood premiere. As I see, this is a week-old article.
Yeah. Pretty sure the premiere has happened.
Yep.
Yeah.
His Instagram account, which he has been previewing artwork and answering fan questions, has also been deleted. This is a continuation of the popular X-Men animated series cartoon, another bubble of joy that JC hates. Okay,
no,
I agree. It wasn't a bubble of joy. I didn't like it either. But I don't hate it the way you hate it.
There's no joy in X-Men 93. Although I will concede, and I don't wanna yuck the yum of those who were children in 1993. That was a great fucking gateway show to watch and get you into comic books. I concede that now. I may cringe every time I hear the theme song. But at the same time, I understand how important it was and how powerful it was for people to get into the soap opera that can be comic books.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah. If I were to read the rest of this article to you fine folks, all you'd find out is other stuff that DeMeo has worked on and not one goddamn thing about why he was fired. My guess is, like most cartoons, you get two seasons and then you get canceled and they just sent the letter early.
Or you got two seasons. They're like, okay, we want to give someone else a shot and didn't say in the letter. Also, we're going to give you this new series at Disney. No,
nope.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Seth Rogen walks in the room and everybody's head explodes.
Exactly.
So Star Wars,
I might let him have that franchise.
It's not as bad as the one where Wolverine was Australian.
Oh, that was the Pride of the X-Men. Yeah. I'm like, that was the worst voice casting. And here's the thing. At that time in Hollywood, who was in charge of Marvel Studios? Stan Lee. And he didn't step in and say, we can't cast an Australian as Wolverine. He's Canadian. Although maybe to Stan, all Canadians sound.
I was gonna say.
Sound Australian.
You never know.
I don't know.
Yeah. G'day. I'm the best there is at what I do. What I do isn't very nice. Snicked. That's a knife.
That's not a knife. Snicked.
So the actor who plays the Mandalorian that's not Pedro Pascal.
See.
He's basically the guy that does all the work.
Yeah, he's the guy in the suit. Okay, go on.
The guy who shows up on set every day. Pedro just shows up in the recording studio, and then when they need him to have his helmet off. Yeah.
Right, yep. Right.
Anyway, his name is Brendan Wayne. Mm-hmm. Brendan Wayne is basically a glorified animatronic Muppet.
Yep.
Who walks very well. He's very good. I've never seen him trip or anything. Anyway, he's revealed that Lucasfilm and Disney's focus is now on the feature film The Mandalorian and Grogu, and that there are currently no plans for a season 4.
Though, I will say about Brendan Wayne, there is an art to portraying a character always in a helmet, always covered with a mask, that so few, you know, that they you can't always get right. Looking at you, Tobey Maguire Spider-Man with Willem Dafoe covered in that stupid Green Goblin mask that just completely sapped his whole performance. Anytime he was playing the Green Goblin, we're like, oh, fuck this guy again. You know, it wasn't until, you know, that his little scene where he's talking to the mask and going insane. I was like, why can't you just paint green makeup on him? It would have been so much better.
Yeah.
But it's because we want so much. We need so much from Willem Dafoe's face. And so when they did Iron Man and whoever was in the suit, when it wasn't Robert, when it wasn't RDJ with the helmet off, could convey through movement exactly emotions and everything. We felt connected to him, even though we could not see his face and eyes. And the same thing with the Mandalorian. We can't see their face and eyes, but we feel connected to them. And that speaks to the craft of the actor, even though they are just a giant Muppeteer. Yes, I agree.
That's it for the news.
All right, another break, and when we come back, it's time for comics.
I'm Peter Davison. I played the Fifth Doctor, and you're listening to the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Kevin Eastman, co-creator of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you're listening to me on the world's greatest comic book podcast.
Wah, wah, wah!
All right, it's time, my friends, on this fine St. Patrick's Day, to do some comic book news.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice,
Image Comics announces Plastic, a sequel called Plastic, Death and Dolls, from Doug Wagner and Daniel Hilliard, both from Plastic Plush and Vinyl. You know, I've slept with Doug. He is a tender and caring lover. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We had him to the store. I'm sorry. It was totally different. Totally different.
Oh, just kidding.
But yeah, no, we had him in the store just not too long ago for a signing, and he was a tender and caring lover the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
He's a wonderful guy. I mean, it's a wonderful guy. And then when you read what he writes, you're like, huh.
Yeah, that's not what I expected out of Doug Wagner. I'll agree.
Hey, it's a love story. It's true. At its heart, it is a love story about a man and his blow-up doll. And a serial killer, to be precise, and his blow-up doll.
Yep.
All I have to say about this article is what I said to Doug on Facebook. Shut up and take my money.
That's it. It's true.
Shut up and take my money. I'm going to buy this because I fucking love it.
Is this the secret? Is this the secret he's been not telling us for quite a while, you think? Or is there something else coming?
Oh, there's more. Oh, no. He's... I know he's not as far ahead as I am because, you know, he's got artists who this is their full-time job and he's able to pay them to do it as their full-time job. He's still probably at least a year ahead on everything. So he's got more that is coming.
Yeah.
Probably a sequel to his Viking one. And I'm sure there's more. Yeah.
Anyway, it'll be out June 12th. So if you want that, call your local comic book shop. Get it in your hold ASAP. We're doing June FOC any fucking minute now.
Yep.
We're doing IOC any minute. FOC's later.
Yeah. Yep. FOC will come about the end of this month, and then your IOC. But you can do your IOC right now.
IOC's end of the month. FOC's 2 weeks before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, X-Men From the Ashes. Marvel confirms a new X-Men comics franchise relaunch. I'm excited about this,
mm-hmm.
and I had a chat with a gentleman that comes into the shop that reads comics. You know, that I have a lot of respect for his opinion because he is very widely read, you know, and all of that. And I was, and I'm like, I was just talking about it with somebody else. And I was like, I'm really excited for this. And he's like, nah, I'm not. I like the Krakoa era. And I was like, oh, were you reading all the titles? He's like, yeah. I'm like, well, there you go, buddy.
Yeah.
You know, all the titles is all the titles because I could not keep up.
Yeah, it's the only way you could have gotten into the Krakoa era, in my opinion. This group, and we'll go into depth in this on Patreon today at patreon.com/dfinmedia. Go into depth on this to talk about what each of these can mean, that sort of thing. But, I mean, just the creators that are going to be working on these first three are so exciting. It's so exciting. You know?
Well, let's do that. So the straight-up X-Men title. No, no qualifier. X-Men, written by Jed McKay, who, as time goes on, I am loving more and more and more.
Mm-hmm.
He did that really fun run on Taskmaster that made Taskmaster not annoying. It was actually funny as hell.
His current work on Avengers is amazing.
Yep.
So yeah,
and he will be joined by Ryan fucking Stegman.
In like
drawing this one.
Kip Zdarsky's nemesis, Ryan Stegman.
Yep. Yep. Uncanny X-Men is Gail Simone and David Marquez. Gail this Simone.
This one has me very excited. Not just for Gail Simone and David Marquez, but this is an X-Men team I like.
Yep.
I mean, when it comes down to it. So,
and, and I think we're going to do the heavy breakdown on these when we get to Patreon.
Yeah, exactly. Sweet. What they're going to entail. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's the Exceptional X-Men, which has some new folks I don't recognize.
Yep.
But will be written by Eve Ewing and drawn by Carnero. So I'm excited about that one too.
Carmen Carnero.
Yep.
And so then following that, sometime over the summer, we're going to start hearing about, there's going to be a Phoenix series, an X-Factor series, a Storm series. So if you felt like you're not getting enough of Phoenix and Storm in the X-Men comics, we're going to make sure you get it. Nyx is returning. NYX is returning. We'll continue with Wolverine and X-Force. Those I don't think have ever gone away.
So, nope.
Yeah, not since they were created. When they were created, they've never really gone away. Well, Wolverine did for a while when Marvel was trying to kill the X-Men because, you know, Fox. Right. But no, I'm looking for the X-Factor. So the X-Factor series, I'm hoping, is a return to form for X-Factor with what Peter David was able to do with Multiple Man and everything. On the other hand, I wouldn't mind it being more of a superhero story anyway. So,
you didn't read, as if I recall correctly, Leah Williams' run on X-Factor.
I think I don't remember if I did or not.
Yeah, it was fun. Like, it was the only X book I read. It was about 2-3 years ago. Mm-hmm. It was the only X book I was even peeking at. Because I think Leah Williams is going to end up on that same shelf with Kelly Sue and Gail. She's a very talented writer. I really, really liked it. And because X-Factor is younger people, I think she had a really good feel for it, that while Peter David's run was genius, you know, Peter didn't start writing that until he was like my age, did he?
Yeah.
Because no, I think he's like 120 years old, right?
Yeah, you know, he was definitely older, wiser, and he was taking it from a different. So X-Factor, when it debuted, was the original X-Men reunited for the very first time. In fact, bringing back Jean Grey, which Claremont was like, "What the fuck did you just do?" Because they promised him, he was dead, basically, and then they bring her back, and then they said, "Okay, let's." Then that moved into being the villains, taking on heroic roles as X-Factor. And then that eventually evolved into Peter David's take with Multiple Man basically running a detective agency. Which was It sounds dumb, but it was really one of the best ones they did.
No, I liked it. I really did.
And when it came back, he brought it back in the early 2000s or mid 2000s, brought it back. And then we had Leah Williams basically bring in like you said, the younger generation, as it were.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see, where'd we get to? Okay, we're right there. All right. La Borinquenta, creator, publishing comics to raise awareness of endometriosis. Edgardo Miranda Rodriguez, award-winning graphic novelist, philanthropist, and creator of superhero La Borinquena, announced this week that he will publish the one-shot comic book Luz La Luminosa for International Women's Heritage and Endometriosis Awareness Month. Jesus Christ, I'm talking about comic books. What is with all the science words this week? Good Lord. Miranda Rodriguez says Luz La Luminosa, introduced in the pages of La Borinquena, Jesus Christ, is the first superhero with endometriosis, a disease that affects 1 in 10 women, people with a uterus, 176 million people globally. The disease hits close to home for Miranda Rodriguez because his wife and partner, this article hates me, Kyun Young Miranda, Jesus Christ, has been living with endometriosis her entire adult life. His close friend and frequent La Borinquena collaborator, Rosario Dawson, also has endometriosis. And Miranda Rodriguez says he hopes the comic book will allow readers to learn about the symptoms, treatments, and resources available. I had a coworker with endometriosis and watched her go through a pregnancy with it, and do not recommend. 0 out of 10.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, we did not see her much for several months.
Sure.
DC Pride 2024 gets first details and variant covers. DC Pride began in 2021, seeking to spotlight the publisher's various LGBTQ plus characters and creators through a month-long publishing initiative. As DC revealed on Wednesday, the festivities are back for another year and arguably bigger than ever. Mm-hmm. The centerpiece of this year's offering will be DC Pride 2024 number 1, a 104-page anthology that will be published on May 28th. Oh, my goodness. Before Pride?
Yeah.
It'll be nice, though, when we read the Marvel one that comes out, I believe, in late September.
Yeah,
yeah, June 6th. DC will publish DC Pride, a celebration of Rachel Pollack, a 96 one-shot celebrating the legendary transgender writer. Pollack, who passed away in April of 2023. It'll be reprinting Doom Patrol 70, the debut of DC's first transgender superhero, Coagula. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have a feeling I know what that superpower is, and that is fucked up. Yeesh. What's your superpower? I make blood thick.
Yikes.
Ow.
Hey, what? Bad things can happen with that, man.
What a terrible way to go.
Right?
Your heart would just be like, bump, bump. What the fuck? Bump, bump. Let's see. Where'd I get to? Along with the long unavailable one-shot Vertigo Visions, The Geek, and an original Coagula story from Joe Carollo and Rye Hickman.
Fans, I have it here. By the way, I have that Vertigo Visions here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Fans can also pick up DC Pride Uncovered number 1 on June 11th, which collects many of the previous DC Pride's variant covers. A number of Pride-themed variant covers will also be released across June. Mm-hmm. And if you want to know what it's about, well, in June, get down to your fucking local comic book shop and pick some up. I'm not going to tell you what it's about. You need to read what it's about. Get in here. Come on.
And get the Rachel Pollack one. If you don't know anything about Rachel Pollack, and like me, you're an ally, you need to read it. You need to read about Rachel Pollack, because this was a big deal.
She was great. Yeah. And her run on Doom Patrol was fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was fucking amazing.
And she had to follow Grant Morrison, who had taken Doom Patrol well beyond... I mean, what he did with Doom Patrol set him up, basically. Unfortunately, it set him up to write Batman, which he then shat upon. But
oopsie-daisy!
Yep. But what he did with Doom Patrol was next level stuff. Rachel Pollack had to follow that, and she knocked it out of the fucking park. So yeah,
like Jason Aaron following Matt Fraction on Thor.
On Thor,
it went from my favorite book series to my favorite book series.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's it for the news.
Well, let's talk about what we've been reading this week. We'll start with Hefe here. Jeff?
Oh, I've just been reading terrifying articles about epilepsy and adult onset seizure syndrome. I'd like to be conversant with the doctor when we go in and and as we're trying to figure out what the hell's up, you know, with Tiffany's seizures. So I would say as far as my casual reading goes, that's what I've been into this week. Yay.
Yay.
How about you, Joss?
I went in and picked up another giant stack of comic books at Dr. Fulch yesterday and then kind of cried a little at myself because I'm so far behind. But I spent some time and I organized things and I actually read quite a few things. So I don't want to take up too much time. So I will mention, how do you say it? Is it Hecate? I always say it wrong.
Yeah. Hecate.
Hecate. Hecate's Will, number 5. I honestly forgot that this was an ongoing title because it has been so long between issues. Mm-hmm. I understand why and that it happens and things, but it really ended quite well. I hope they're going to throw it into a trade and send it out that way because it will make a great trade. Reading it as singles was frustrating. Daredevil caught up with Daredevils 5 and 6. And... I'm loving this. I am loving this. They've brought in a couple of guest appearances. We had She-Hulk. We have Doctor Strange involved. And then there was a surprise on the last page of number 6 that I went, ooh. So that was fun. Read through White Widow 1-4, the short arc from Sarah Gailey. And by God, did she do a great job with that. If you guys haven't read White Widow 1-4, please, 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 when they drop it as a trade, or if Dr. Volz has it in singles, go get it, because she captures Yelena's voice, perfectly in that.
I've got them over here on the floor.
Yeah?
Purchased, but unread.
I understand. I'm telling you, it was delightful, and I don't know if it's just that I love Florence Pugh in that role so much, but, it was just so delightful to me. Mm-hmm. So delightful. And then the last thing I'll mention that I got read was Crave. I'm caught up on Crave 1-4 so far. And it's a creepy app. They're just doing creepy things. It's very grown up. Be warned. Lots of content that's mature.
Yay.
Yay. Yeah. So I'm trying to bust through. I still have my entire giant stack of Gang War and... hopefully I can get through that soon. Mm-hmm. How about you, sir? What'd you read this week?
So starting out with Sons of Star Trek. This one had a potential of really sucking. And I went in braced for that and was delightfully proven wrong by it. It's actually a really good, it's a really strong book. It ties directly into the current Star Trek run, which is Star Trek series, comic book series run, which is good. But you get Jake and Nog. This is just after Voyager comes back. So, and before Star Trek Nemesis, that's about when this in the timeline, all the Star Trek series takes place and where this takes place. And of course we have the return of Benjamin Sisko. But this one also has Alexander, whom, yeah, I've never cared for. And even the DS9 Alexander, I was like, oh boy, let's just shit on this character even more. But this one, I mean, he had joined Kalis in his red thing where he was taking over the universe, and now he's basically a prisoner. Jake wants to interview him to get his perspective. And, of course, he's being combative because he's Klingon. And who shows up but Q Jr. from Voyager? He even says, no, I'm not Q. That was my father. You can call me Q Jr. or QJ. And I was like, okay, we'll go with QJ. And he takes them. He then snaps his fingers and takes them to a universe because he says, you're all at a crossroads. I'm going to help you. I know how to help you. So he takes them to this universe where basically they're all Starfleet officers. They've all been through the academy. At this point, only Nog has been through the academy in the actual universe, right? Because Jake didn't want to join, and obviously Alexander never joined. He joined the Klingon Defense Force. So this is the moment where they're all, no, we're actually all Starfleet officers. What I really liked in this is Alexander is a medical technician. I thought that was really cool. Rather than being this chief of security or something, he's a medical technician. And then Hugh has basically put them in this other universe where Gul Dukat is the captain of this starship, which is going to be a problem for Jake because, as far as he's concerned, Dukat's why he lost his father for as long as he did. Then you've got Tuvix, which was quite shocking, and I think, well, that's doing some fan service right there. You've got Mariner as the first officer, so this is a universe where she didn't give up on, you know, herself and just stay an ensign. Just a really cool little story, and I'm excited for it. Picked up Suicide Squad Dream Team number one by Nicole Maines. It's a Suicide Squad story. It does feature what's her name, who runs this, who is over all of it. And I don't like those stories as much, but so I'm glad this is only four issues. But I am enjoying what Nicole Maines is doing. And then Black Widow and Hawkeye number one. Boy, so you got Black Widow with a symbiote now. And what she does with that symbiote is fucking creepy and wonderful. And then, you know, Clint being Clint decides he's got to handle something on his own. And so she's gone there to give him the lecture about handling things on his own. He's like, you know, they knocked out my hearing aid. I'm glad I can't hear her, but I know what she's saying anyway. As she's lecturing him on, you don't have to do these things alone. There are people who will drop anything to help you. And yeah, it was really cool. But yeah, it turns out what they suspect him of doing, he actually did. And we don't know why yet, why he did it. So, Clint's on the run, and Natasha's going to help him. Natasha and her new symbiote are going to help him. This could be fun. That's what I read. And today is Tuesday. That means tomorrow's Wednesday. It's time to give our picks.
You only say hello so you can say goodbye. These two words must make your life complete. You pick out the hearts that break to make your ego high. And I was just your pick of the week.
What are we looking forward to this week? We'll start with Jess.
Let's start. We might as well start in mainstream. I didn't find much in mainstream this week, but I did find that the Miss Marvel, the New Mutant, Amon Vellani's writing debut is out in trade paperback. So if you didn't get to pick it up in singles, pick it up in a trade paperback. If for no other reason than Amon Vellani is adorable and loves Miss Marvel so much that she did a great job with this. I've enjoyed it.
Well, if any reason, it's a great fucking series. Yeah.
Right. Right. It's a great series. It's a little 1-4 mini series and was really, really cute and well done. So, yeah. How about you, Jeff? What's your mainstream picks?
Mainstream picks coming in from Marvel. Looking for X-Men Forever, number one. I don't know why. It's Karen Gillan, and I love her in Doctor Who.
She was great.
But yeah, it's... I don't know. I'm excited. I'm excited for the reboot this summer to the point where I'm starting to get a little trigger happy. And it's like, my biggest complaint with the X-Men is there's too many fucking titles, and they're like, hey, we're killing everybody. Here's a new title. Yay. Won't make it through the summer, but what are you going to do? But, yeah, basically, it's the Haunted House of X. So I'm looking forward to that one. And then Wonder Woman number 7. We do a lot of number ones when we talk about our picks of the week, but...
we do.
Yeah, this run of Wonder Woman by Tom King has been exceptional all throughout. Yes. And if you haven't had a chance to read it, call up Dr. Volz or your local comic book shop and ask them when that first bit comes out in trade.
Very soon, actually.
Yep.
Very soon.
Yes.
I just can't remember the day. That's all.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember what month, but I know it's coming very soon. And the first six issues covers the first half of the story, and that'll be coming out in trade. This issue 7 is really cool because it's basically taking a pause while Wonder Woman and Superman go to the Galactic Mall to find a gift for Batman.
I love it.
And shenanigans ensue. So
shenanigans.
Yep.
Aren't you in charge of that this year?
I am. I am. I am the coordinator of shenanigans. Thank you for asking. Anyway, what'd you read, JC?
Okay. Yeah, he didn't hand it off. Okay, my turn. From Marvel, we've got the Invincible Iron Man number 16. This is the one, man. This is it. D-Day. D-Day is here, they claim. Iron Man versus Feilong. Finally. It's taken us 16 issues to get to this, by the way, which is really fun. This is Tony, full-on mecha, taking on Feilong, who stole his company. Reading solicitations going into June. I don't think the fight will be quite over with by then. It's not going to end with this issue, I can tell you that. So, still just knocking it out of the park, Jerry Duggan. Well done. And then from DC Comics, we've got the April special number 1. It's going to be Jeff's favorite comic of the month. All the talking monkeys are together in one book.
No.
That's really mean.
Yep. An absurd amount of bad ape puns are incoming. Please be ape-vised. Gorilla Grodd's recent incarnation of the pages of The Flash has left a void that Monsieur Mala is more than happy to fill. Assembling a group of the DC's most sinister simians, Mala forms the Legion of with an eye toward world domination.
Ouch.
Okay, this is hurting too much. So yeah, we get an all-ape Justice League forming. With the the super chimp, detective chimp, and even King, the Monkey King, and a few other characters. Gleek is showing up, or Gleep. So yeah, why not? Let's have some fun. It's written by Gene Luen Yang is one of the writers for it, and he was the guy who wrote Monkey King, which I really enjoyed. So. Let's have some fun. And then let's get into my indie pick this week. My indie pick is Critter number 1 from Antarctic Press. I just like the tagline, the second best superhero comic book in the universe. That's for me. But apparently she's a kitty or something like a kitty superhero. And she was a Midwest superhero, but now that she's moved out west, it's time for her to discover her true place in the world of heroes and villains and her destiny according to a visitor from the future. So, why not? How about you, Jeff? What's your indie picks?
Indie picks are pretty easy this week. Boom's bringing out Man's Best.
Mm-hmm.
Dark Horse is bringing out Dawn Runner. Dawn Runner, Dave Stewart. Doing Dawn Runner with Rom V, Evan Cagle. I mean, what's not to like? A century ago, a portal opened over Central America, and the Tetsa that came through changed our world. Now the world bends all its effort to making the Iron King's great mechs that must battle the Tetsa for humanity. It's fucking robo tech.
Yeah.
Nice.
In Central America, and I am here for it. I like Ram V. I like him a lot. So I dig it. What about you, Jocelyn?
Couple of indie picks that are in my hold. I'm caught up on these as well, so I'm super excited. From Jason Aaron and Boom Studios, Once Upon a Time at the End of the World, number 13. We need to find out if the Ravagers are going to get Maseo's machines and end the world, and we got to find out what happens there. And then the other one is Image Comics, writers Ethan Parker and Griffin Sheridan with Kill Your Darlings, number 7. Because Rose is going to embrace her fate, and the stage is going to be set for a shocking final confrontation as the penultimate issue of this horrifying epic. So, those two are going to wrap up really soon, and they've been really good, so pick them up if you haven't been reading them. That's it.
All right. Let's jump into the TARDIS and give our picks of the future. All right, Joss, what's your pick for May?
Well, I was scrolling through, and Image Comics is bringing out the Whisper Queen, number 1 of 3, miniseries premiere from Chip Zdarsky. It is a return to the fantastical land of Black Sand, which was in The White Trees, which was another miniseries from Chip. The Royal Guard has sent their most capable bounty hunters after the accomplices in the king's murder. Pavro, once the king's most skilled assassin, must find the killers before they and the bounty hunters, including her son, are wiped out by the king's most feared specter, the Dark Whisper. I really enjoyed The White Trees. I always enjoy Chip Zdarsky. I'm going to grab this one. How about you, Jeff?
From IDW comes Star Trek Strange New Worlds, the Scorpius run in trade, which is how I'm going to have to read it because I totally didn't read it when it came out in floppies. So
fair enough.
Yeah.
It happens.
It's worth reading. It's worth reading. I can tell you that.
That's the only reason I'm excited about it is because you read it already and said it was good.
Mm-hmm. It was not what I expected, and it was better than what my brain canon had when I first read about the series.
Yeah.
Nice.
What about you?
From Image Comics, we get Grommets number 1 by Rick Remender. And ordinarily I would have passed on it because I still haven't forgiven him for Axis. but he's co-writing it with Brian Posehn. And I was like, oh really? What do we have here? With Brent Parson and Marino DeSimio doing the art. And this is a story about two best friend outcasts navigating the Sacramento suburbs of 1984, where they find a home in skateboard culture and punk rock. On one side of the coin, Grommets is an authentic look at 80s skater culture. And on the other hand, it's a heartfelt coming-of-age story that follows two friends from troubled homes as they navigate their damage in an era when no one cared. Not being a part of 80s skater culture, because I left that up to Jeff's little brother.
He does it well.
Yeah, he does it very well. I could not stand on a skateboard without falling off, so I was never a skater. But I appreciated the culture, and I appreciated the punk rock stuff of it all. I would say, you know, if you're a fan of Lords of Dogtown, this is a great one. This would be a great one to pick up. And if you know someone who's thinking about getting into comics and you say, well, what's your favorite movie? And they say Lords of Dogtown. Now you got a comic book to give them.
There you go.
Yeah. This is a great little, this looks like a lot of fun, and it'll be a 7-issue miniseries. So it'll be out in trade. This is coming out in May. So it'll be out in trade by next year, early next year. You might even be able to get it as a Christmas gift if Image pushes it fast enough. So we'll see. But yeah, it looks really fun. It looks really interesting. And yeah, going for Grommets. And no, it's not about, you know, the breed of dogs from Wallace and Gromit. That's what I thought it was going to be. But no, it's not. It's not skaters. And that's it. Anything else this week?
Nope.
Nothing I can think of other than, you know, here I am. Peeing blood for you people. So you know, maybe pop over to thecomicbookpodcast.com, click on that little fundraiser there, you know. We can all give together. Though nobody needs to bring me, you know, bloody pee. I don't need that. But, I'd say between that and Patreon, either direction you want to help out. If you're uncomfortable with either of those platforms, we've got PayPal, we've got Venmo, we've got Cash App. Yes, we need help, and I'm begging for it. There it is. You have been begged.
Well, also, I remind everybody to join our Patreon squad at patreon.com/dfinmedia. It is through Patreon that we're able to keep this show going and make it free for you on all the podcast platforms that are out there, except for that one, because we don't like that one. Or that one doesn't like us. I don't remember.
Yeah, that one went away.
That one went away. But that one doesn't like us, I don't think. So, anyway, we're out on all the other ones. You know, it's free because of Patreon and our Patreon members. So join us on Patreon. This week, we're going to break down all the stuff in this X-Men release and why it sounds so fucking cool. So join us.
I'm excited because I don't know shit about the X-Men comics.
Patreon.com/dfinmedia. And then until then, I'll say as I always do, until Hawkeye actually did the thing he's accused of, make mine Marvel.
For Hell's Kitchen.
For Stan.
For Asgard. Motherfuckers.